Recording. Good afternoon, everybody. Good afternoon, and welcome back to another episode in our series, Tefillah, the Past, the Practical, and the Profound. I see that nobody wanted to get too close to me for some reason. That's okay. No, people come, then they'll have somewhere to sit. Usually we talk about tefillah in our Shir series, and the truth is what we're going to talk about today is potentially related to tefillah indirectly, but we'll deviate more or less from the normal discussion that we engage in when we meet, which is tefillah, the history, the halachos, the meaning. And given today's date, which is Yom HaShoah, so we're going to spend some time learning a message related to Yom HaShoah, and our learning, of course, should be in memory of the 6 million Kedoshim who were killed and whose memories and messages we are now tasked with upholding. This is something that I shared on Shabbos. I don't think any of you were there, and so I'd like to share it with you. Even if you heard it on Shabbos, there is a new twist that we'll discuss that we didn't discuss on Shabbos that should be relevant. I think we can learn something important about silence. Okay. So I want to start actually with an anecdote. It's something that Rabbi Sachs has written about, and it's in source number one. He writes as follows. Many years ago, British television produced a documentary series, The Long Search, on the world's great religions. When it came to Judaism, the presenter, Ronald Yer, seemed surprised by its blooming, buzzing confusion, especially the loud, argumentative voices in the Beit Midrash, the House of Study. Judaism is a very verbal religion, and he picked up on that, especially when he went to visit a Beit Midrash, and he saw people arguing and talking in Torah. Remarking on this to Elie Wiesel, he asked, "Is there such a thing as silence in Judaism?" I thought that was an interesting question, and it's a good framing for what we're going to talk about today. Because the truth is that there are some unfortunate connections between silence and the Holocaust, and I think we'll talk about them through a Torah lens today. And we'll return to that Rabbi Sachs quote in a moment, but for right now, I want to focus on something that we read this past week. This past week, we read Parshas Achrimos, and at the beginning of Parshas Achrimos is more famous for its discussion of the Kehuna, specifically on Yom Kippur and the Yom Kippur ritual. But at the very beginning and the Arayos at the end, but at the very beginning of Achrimos, the Torah reminds us of something that took place that we read about in more detail in Parshat Shmini. What am I referring to? The death of Nadav and Avihu. Right, absolutely right. Nadav and Avihu were killed when they offered an incense without permission, and they were killed, and obviously to Aaron's great dismay. And at the beginning of Parshas Achrimos, in source number 2, the Torah tells us, "V'yedaber Hashem Moshe Achrei Mot Shnei Bnei Aharon," that Hashem spoke to Moshe after the death of Aaron's two sons, "V'korvatam Lifnei Hashem V'yamutu," when they attempted to come close to God, and they were killed. Okay, so Parshas Achrimos sort of relives the death of Aaron's two sons, Nadav and Avihu, and that we'll use as a jumping off point because it actually can teach us something, I think, very profound and very important about silence. And how so? So the truth is that there's a midrash that we don't seem to have. There's a midrash that other rabbis quote and cite, so it's clear that, and they even chapter and verse it, so we know that it was part of their collections. It seems to have been excised from the midrashim that we have today. It seems to have been removed, or at least edited out, maybe not necessarily maliciously or on purpose, but we don't have it right now in our midrashic collections. But there's a midrash that's quoted by a number of Sfarim. It's also quoted by the Pardes Yosef in source number 3, that Kevan Sheshama Iov, he quotes it in the name of the Midrash Rabbah. Now again, if you open a Midrash Rabbah, you will not find this midrash, which is very interesting. But he had a version of it. And he writes, Kevan Sheshama Iov Mitat Shnei Bnei Aaron. When Iov heard about the death of Aaron's two sons, who's Iov, by the way? Iov, from the book of Iov, Job, exactly. Kevan Sheshama Iov Mitat Shnei Bnei Aaron. Amar, he said a pasuk, Af lezot yecharad levavi. Even for this, my heart trembles. So what happens? Aaron's two sons die. Eov, who is apparently in the vicinity of this entire encounter, finds out about this, and he gets scared. He gets scared. His heart trembles in fear. Ki af lezot yecharad levavi. For this, my heart trembles. So we have to ask the question, right? Why is Eov scared? Eov didn't bring the incense into the Mikdash. Eov wasn't responsible for what Nadav and Avihu did. When he heard about this, why was he struck with so much trembling? Now, the easy answer to this is because it's a scary thing when you find out someone can drop dead at the drop of a dime because they misstepped. Now, it is scary, but I think there's more to it than that. I think there's more to it than that, yeah?
It occurs to me that Eov tried to...
Eov is terrified. Right? Nadav and Avihu are killed. They offer an unlicensed incense. And Eov is terrified. Eov is scared. That's what the Medrash says. Again, we don't have this Medrash anymore. So you have it here. Save the source sheet. Because if you go looking for it in the Midrash Rabbah, you're not going to find it. But that's what Eov says. And so that's the central question we'll try and answer today. That's what we're going to answer today. Why was Eov so terrified at the death of Nadav and Avihu? That he was so scared. That I'm terrified, I'm trembling, that I heard this news that Nadav and Avihu were killed. And I want to emphasize that I think this is an important question, why Eov was so scared, because I think it can teach us something. Something important, not just about the stories and the narrative in the desert, although that's important too, but about Yom HaShoah and what it means to stand up against genocide. The answer starts to emerge when we look at a Gemara in Maseches Sanhedrin. The Gemara in Masechet Sanhedrin is a very underquoted Gemara, especially because it's fascinating and it's eerie. It's a little bit scary and a little bit strange. And it actually foretells the death of Nadav and Avihu. The Gemara in Masechet Sanhedrin, Nadav Nun Beis Amar Aleph, tells us as follows. Source number 4. Ukvar hayu Moshe ve'Aharon mahalachin baderech. Moshe and Aaron were walking on their way. V'Nadav and Avihu mahalachin achareihen. And Nadav and Avihu were walking behind them. V'chol Yisrael, excuse me. And the children of Israel were walking behind them. So imagine this for a second. They're walking in the desert. There's Moshe and Aaron at the front. Nadav and Avihu are behind them. And then the entire rest of the camp of Israel is behind them. So what happens? Amar lo Nadav lo Avihu. Nadav said to Avihu, Ematayah mutu shnei zekenim halalu. When will it happen that these two old men in front of us will die? The aniva ata nan higet hador, so that you and I can lead the generation. In other words, a chutzpah de question, right? When will these old guys die already, so that we can take over? Imagine that. What the chutzpah? When will these people? When will our parents die, so that we can take over? Amar lehen HaKadosh Baruch Hu. God hears this. He's not so happy to hear this. And he says something chilling. Hanira mi kover esmi. We will see who ends up burying whom. So says God.
Wow, that's powerful.
So Nadav and Avi, who are walking behind Moshe and Aharon, Nadav turns to Avihu and he says to him, come on, let's move history along a little bit for a second here. When will our parents kick the can so that you and I can take over? And God says, We'll see who's going to bury whom. We'll see who's really going to outlive whom. It's chilling when you think about it. That's what the Gemara says. Nadav and Avihu, maybe? Nadav and Avihu are waiting for their parents to die. Or at least Nadav is. He's the one who says this. So that they can take over. So that they can lead the generation. Well, how does this help answer our question? What? Yeah, imagine. So, how does this help answer our question? How does this help us understand why Eov was so terrified at the death of Nadav and Avihu? So the truth is that there is another Gemara. And it's just as fascinating as the first. And it can point us, I think, in the direction of an answer as to why Eov was so fearful on the day he found out that Nadav and Avihu were killed. It's a Gemara in Masechet Sota, Adaf Yud Aleph, and it tells us as follows. Relatively well-known Gemara. Amar Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba, Amar Rabbi Simai. Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba said in the name of Rabbi Simai, Shalosha Hayu V'ota Eitza. Three noteworthy people were consulted by Paro when Paro was trying to figure out what to do with the Jews. Remember at the beginning of the Jews' sojourn in Egypt, or maybe not so close to the beginning, but Paro says, Hava nitchak malo, nitchak malo, let us outsmart them. Let us outsmart them, and otherwise they're going to become too many, they're too powerful. So Paro sets about, probably the first person in history, to try to decide what to do with what we know now as the Jewish question, right? What do we do with the Jews? What do we do with the Jews? We don't like them, they're too powerful, they're too smart. By the way, I will say that the stereotypes against the Jews, I heard this at my commencement from Deborah Lipstadt, who maybe some of you know. Deborah Lipstadt said that the reason why anti-Semitism is so pernicious is because it's unique. It's more unique than other forms of racism. Because typically, racists punch down. What I mean by that, and what she meant by that, is when you are racist, typically you're discriminating against another person on the basis of their inferiority. They're not smart enough. They're not civilized enough. They're not good enough. But the anti-Semite punches upwards. The anti-Semite stakes their claim. The Jews are too successful. They're too powerful. How often have we heard that trope? The Jews are running the world. There's some world order where the Jews are in control of everything. And so anti-Semitism is pernicious because it's guised. It functions very differently than most other forms of racism. Most other forms of racism punch down. They seek to demean. And they argue, in racist ways, that a group or ethnicity or religion or race or whatever it is inferior because it's stupider, it's less civilized, etc., etc. But the anti-Semite punches up. The anti-Semite stakes their claim on the basis that the Jews are too powerful. They're too smart. And that's what Paro was saying. Paro was saying, Hava nitchak malo, let's outsmart them. Because the very idea, notion of outsmart implies that they're also smart. That you have to outsmart them. That they're also pretty clever, pretty intelligent. And so therefore, anyway, I thought that's a fascinating, I think, point that she made at this speech that she gave. But in any case, Paro was worried about what to do with the Jews. And so the Gemara tells us, Amar Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, Amar Rabbi Simai, that there were three people, Shlosha hayu ba'ota etza, that Paro consulted with when he was trying to figure out what to do with the Jewish question. And the Gemara tells us, who were those three people? Before anybody looks at the source sheet, look up, don't look at the source sheet. I know some of you looked already. Someone who hasn't seen the source sheet, want to try to guess who the three people were Paro consulted with? Did everybody look?
Yes.
Okay, everybody looked already.
I almost saw two other people, but I can't think of the third.
Okay, who'd you see?
Yitro.
And Bilam. Okay. And we spoke about him today. It's our character, Eob. Paro, the Gemara tells us, consulted with three people when he was trying to figure out what to do with the Jews. He consulted with Eob. He consulted with Bilam. And he consulted with Yitro. Yitro, Moshe's father-in-law. Bilam, from Parshas Balak, and Eov, who we've just been speaking about. And so that is who Paro consulted with. It's interesting to note that they were all available for consultation, right? We know that Yitro, for example, was out in the wilderness. So how is he there? So the Gemara is going to explain this. What happened? So Bilam Sheya'atz Neharag. Bilam, who was Miyaitz Paro, meaning he advised Paro to actually commit infanticide and kill all of the firstborn sons, which is actually one of the things that Paro sought to do. He said Neharag. Bilam was killed. As we know, Bilam was killed in the war with Midjan. We know from Bamidbar Perek Lamed Aleph that Bilam is killed in the war with Midian. So, fine. Or maybe it doesn't say there, but okay. So he was killed in the war with Midian because he advocated for the death of the Jews. So he was punished. Eov Sheshatak Nidon Biyisurin. Eov, who just sat there silently, which is not a good thing, he was punished with suffering. And we know that almost the entire book of Eov is about Eov's various maladies and afflictions and misfortunes and things like that. And what happened to Yitro? Yitro, Shebarach, Zakim, Bnei, Benav, Sheyashu, Vilishka, Sagazis. Yitro, who fled. In other words, Yitro said, I want nothing to do with this. And that's how he ended up in Midian, outside of the land of Egypt, when Moshe later on tried to find him. It's because he fled. He said, I don't want to be a part of this regime. I don't want to be a part of the solution to the Jewish problem. I want out. And so he fled. And he was Zocha, the Gemara tells us, to have the Bnei Banav Shiyashu Lishas Kazis, to have his descendants sitting in the temple. Because as we know, his daughter married Moshe, and their sons, their children became Jewish. His grandchildren were Jewish. Okay, so in any case, what do we see from here as follows? Number one is that Paro consulted with three people, Eo, Bilam, and Yitro. What happened to Bilam? Bilam said, kill the Jews, basically. Okay, he was killed. Yitro said, I'm not participating in this. I will not stay in the room. I'm leaving because I don't want to have to. I'm not helping you kill the Jews. Yitro was rewarded for that. And Eov was silent, kind of occupies the middle ground between refusing to participate and actively suggesting death. He stays in the room. He says, I will be here for the conversations about killing Jews, but I'm not going to be the one who actively suggests it. And he was also punished. He was punished with suffering. It's an interesting Gemara, no? Right? What is this? What do we do with this Gemara? So now we've learned three things. Number one, Nadav and Avihu's death scared Eov. That was the first thing that we learned. Eov was terrified. Number two is Nadav and Avihu plotted and really anticipated their parents' death so that they could overtake the throne in a chilling Gemara. That's number two. And number three is that there were three people who Paro tried to consult with. Bilam, who advocated infanticide and was killed, and Eov, who was silent and was punished, and Yitro, who fled and was rewarded. Okay? So we have these three things that we just read about. Nadav and Avihu's death scared Eov. Nadav and Avihu were anticipating their parents' death, or at least Nadav was when he spoke to Avihu about it. And number three is that Eov was consulted with when Paro tried to figure out what to do with the Jews, and he stayed silent. So how does this answer our question? So I think that, and it's not my chiddush, but hidden in these stories is the key to understanding what made Eov so scared when he found out that Nadav and Avihu died. And the answer to this weaves all of what we just learned together to suggest something astonishing and chilling. It comes to us courtesy of the Rabbanei Ashkenaz, which is a group of rabbis quoted by the Chida on the second page in source number 6. The Chida, who was the Chida? Anybody know? His mother did not name him Chida. Rabbi Chaim Yosef David Azulai, who was a great rabbi who was from the Holy Land, but he actually spent a lot of his life traveling, raising money in Europe and in various other places. He was pretty itinerant. And he wrote many, many Sfarim. One of them is called Chomat Anach, which is a commentary on a commentary on Tanakh, a commentary on the Torah as well. And in the beginning of Parshas Achrimos, he explains something fascinating. I'm going to read it in English. It's in source number 6. The Midrash says that once Eov saw the death of Aaron's two sons, he said, Af lezot yecherad levavi, or libi, because of this my heart trembles. And he said, and I heard in the name of Rabbani Ashkenaz, I heard b'shem Rabbani Ashkenaz, the rabbis of Ashkenaz, the Eov haya miyoatzei Paro. And we saw that in the Gemara, that Eov was one of Paro's advisors. K'sha'amar hava nitchak malo shata. When Paro said, let us outsmart them, what did Eov do? You all know the answer to this question because we read the Gemara. What did Eov do? He was quiet. He was quiet. Husavar deshtika lav klumhi. Because he thought that silence is neutral. I'm not doing anything wrong by saying silence. I'm not helping the Jews, but I'm not hurting the Jews. So I might as well stay quiet on this whole thing. Eov chose to stay silent while Paro was plotting his genocide, and he thought that was the best way forward, right? Imagine if you were Eov sitting in that room. He thought to himself, I'll stick it out. I'll stick it out, and I'll just lay low. I'll be quiet. I won't speak up, and I won't actively harm the Jews, but I'm not going to risk my life, or I'm not going to put myself out there to try to save them or to suggest something that would mitigate the harm that has this, that's coming to the Jews. I'll just stay quiet. Okay? But what happened? What happened? Uksheraa d'shnei b'nei Aaron d'nadav amar l'avihu. And when he heard Nadav say to his brother Avihu, Matai yamutu shnei zekenim halalu, when will our parents finally die? For Avihu shatak, and Avihu said nothing in return to Nadav's egregious statement. Umetu shnehem, and not only that, but both of them were killed. Eov realized something chilling. Eov realized shmamina de al hashtika levad ne'enash. Eov realized, oh my gosh, Avihu was killed along with Nadav. Avihu, in the story that we just read, didn't do anything. Nadav was the one who said, when will our parents finally die? Nadav was the one who planted the seed of power hunger inside of Avihu's mind. Nadav was the one who was patach peh, he opened his mouth to complain about his parents' very existence. But both of them went to the grave. Both Nadav and Avihu were killed for what they did. And he realized, oh my God, Shmamina al hashtika levad ne'enash. Avihu was punished just for merely staying silent. And it was at that moment that Eov uttered those fateful words, Ach lezot yecherad levavi. Even for this, my heart trembles. Because Eov realized what staying silent can really do. Eov realized that if you stay silent about somebody else's death, that could very well mean your own. And so Eov was stricken with terror. Ad kan devarav. This is the explanation, or divrehem, of the rabbis of Ashkenaz. It's a powerful medrash. In short, the Midrash tells us, and I'll summarize here, the Midrash tells us that Eov got scared when Nadav and Avihu died. Why? Because Avihu didn't do anything wrong. His only crime was not saying something and not speaking up. And so when Avihu was killed too, Eov realized the implications for his own behavior so many years ago in Egypt. Eov realized that staying silent is a crime. That staying silent is deadly. That silence is complicity and silence is violence, as the old adage goes. And when the Jews were on the chopping block, Eov sat in silence and he realized that silence is actually deadly. Today is Yom HaShoah. Today is the day that we remember the dangers of silence. We remember the dangers of not speaking up to say anything. It's unfortunate that what we're about to read has become so famous, but it's true. It's a famous poem called First They Came, written by, I don't know how to pronounce his last name, Martin Niemöller. And maybe some of you have heard this before. First they came for the communists, and I did not speak out because I was not a communist. Then they came for the socialists, and I did not speak out because I was not a socialist. Then they came for the trade unionists, and I did not speak out because I was not a trade unionist. Then they came for the Jews, and I did not speak out because I was not a Jew. But then they came for me, and there was nobody left to speak out. It's chilling, but that is the story of how things go. That is how things went in 1939, in 1940, in 1941. That is how things went in Nigeria, in Rwanda, excuse me. That is how things go. Today is Yom HaShoah. Today is the day that we remember the dangers of silence. How can we not speak about this on a day like today? All of us need to commit to speaking up against atrocities. All of us need to commit to making sure that we are not a part of the problem, but we are a part of the solution. And all of us need to remember that there is never such a thing as an innocent bystander. And the truth is, in a way, the Jews should not be the ones who have to hear this message. It's the world who stood idly by when the Jews were being killed. But the truth is that you never know when you will be in a situation to help somebody else. You know, there's a famous story, maybe some of you remember, this was on the news, the story of Kitty Genovese. Does that sound familiar?
Yes.
There's a lot of nods. I'm not going to go into it now. But that too was perpetrated because there was a number, there were innocent bystanders who were silent. They didn't do anything wrong. There is no such thing, my friends, as an innocent bystander. And so I think on a day like today, what greater tribute could we make to the memory of those who were killed in the Khorban, that was the Holocaust, than to spend some time learning and warning about the dangers of silence. May the memories, the neshamot of those who were killed in the Holocaust have an Elias neshama. May the world know no more loss, and may we experience the redemption speedily in our days when we will be reunited with those 6 million Jews whose lives were cut short way too fast. Thank you all for coming. I hope that you have a meaningful rest of your Yom HaShoah. The plan is to meet back here in 2 weeks, and 2 Mondays from today at 2 p.m. If you want to hold on to your source sheet, you can. Otherwise, you can put it up here. And we will end here for today.